Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. Yes, Satan?
Pizza, land shark,
Candygram. My name is Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, is...
Billy Crash.
And we compose... two members of the Wild Bunch, the Bad Bunch, or wait, is it the Bad Batch, Bill? Is that what I'm thinking about?
Yeah, I got my tattoo right here, man.
Yeah, they tattooed the cherries on my ass, so I don't know what that's... I said my forehead and they put it on my ass, so anyway.
Wow.
But tonight we are doing another in our ongoing series of horror double feature shows where we take a look at usually two more recent films, maybe films that are getting some buzz in the online community.
Or hatred.
Yeah, we swing both ways as far as that's concerned. If a film has some sort of reputation around it and it's recent or is gaining some controversy, this is the type of show where we take a look, see if the hype is warranted, and give our thoughts on things. So in addition to The Bad Batch, directed and written by Anna Lily Amirpour, we will be talking about this year's very interesting film, French film, Raw, directed and written by Julia Ducournau. And yes, folks, this is going to be one of those episodes where we are going to totally butcher the hell out of some people's names. So we, figuratively speaking, of course, so we apologize in advance to any of the filmmakers or cast members who may be listening to this episode, and it is our hope that they all are. In any case, though, we are going to start off tonight by talking about Ms. Amirpour's film, The Bad Batch, which had a limited theatrical run earlier this year and recently came available on a VOD. I watched it two nights ago on Amazon Video.
I saw it on Netflix.
Oh, did you get the disc, Bill?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Oh, they have it on Netflix, too. All right.
Yep.
Ah, damn it. I spent $4 to rent that movie.
Yes, you did.
What a fucking asshole. Oh,
but you look good, Johnny.
No, man. That cherry. Okay, now it makes sense where they put the cherry tattoo. Anyway.
Oh, man.
But in any case, The Bad Batch is...
Oh, brother.
It is, oh, brother. It's a film that centers around a young woman named Arlen, and it's set in what I like to call a junkyard dystopia.
Beautifully stated.
It's pretty much a desert wasteland. It's after the apocalypse. Some people have really good personal hygiene, others do not. I don't know. It's sort of like the world of Blade Runner in a way, but anyway.
It's more like Mad Max.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mad Max in a golf cart.
Yeah, with Jim Carrey.
Or dragged along on a skateboard, perhaps. But in any case, Arlen is played by Suki Waterhouse.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Delicious. And she finds herself wandering the desert wasteland after being sort of kicked out of so-called civil society.
She goes 20 feet, man. She ain't wandering anywhere. She goes 20 feet to a fucking car and then her life really changes.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. She's a sort of attacked, and part of her arm and leg are mined for food by a local cannibal community.
Bridge people.
Yes. Including future upcoming Aquaman, Jason Momoa.
Yeah, he's awesome.
And after
Miami Man.
Yes, Miami Man. what was Aquaman before he was Aquaman? Miami Man. And he apparently rode around in the slice of life. But anyway. But she escapes this group of cannibals, the Bridge People, and finds herself in the community of comfort. And yes, there is much symbolism in this film.
Really?
I don't know, Bill. I might be reading into it a bit too much, but in any case.
And who was Comfort?
I don't know who Comfort was, Bill, but the Dream.
Oh, the Dream, yes. The Dream and Comfort, yes.
Was none other than Mr. John Wick himself, Keanu Reeves.
He was freaking awesome, man.
Wow, yeah.
He just, I'm sorry. Yeah, keep going. Do your thing.
I'm actually pretty much done. I was going to stop there because that's pretty much like the first half hour or so of the film. Mm-hmm. And it's a 2-hour movie, so a lot happens, or does a lot happen. Billy, what were your initial impressions of this film, and had you heard anything about it prior to watching it? Was it on your radar? Because I know you were a big fan of A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which was Miss Amirpour's previous film.
Yes. Well, with her previous film, you know, I think that's one of the greatest horror movies ever made. It's funny. I want to talk to Bill Meeker, a.k.a. Frisco Kid, a.k.a. the man behind Loud Green Bird, about it because he thought it was pretentious. And I'm like, what? I'm like, what the hell, Bill? You know, we got to talk. But I love that movie. So when you told me about it and you're like, yeah, The Bad Batch, you know, by Lily Amirpour, I'm like, you know, I'm like, I got to see this thing. And so this is like her sophomore effort. And so I was very intrigued. And I did like the first half hour, I would say about the first 45 minutes of the film. I was really, really into it. And I was like, this is great. We're just going to go. She's on a journey. And it's like, no, she's not. She's going from one town to the next. And it's like, and that's it. You know, she goes like two places. And, you know, it right from the beginning, you know, I thought it was cool. It's like the United States, for whatever reason, decides if you're, you know, it's pretty much like we don't have an island, but we're going to kick you out into like pretty much like the Mexican desert, I would think, you know, like, you know, south of the border, you know, outside of Texas, you know, we're going to kick you out in the Baja region of Mexico or something like that. And you have to fend for yourself. You're no longer a citizen because for whatever reason you were deemed unacceptable. And so we don't know what these people did, what their crimes were, and they have to fend for themselves. So it's like Escape from New York without that atmosphere. And it's like I said, it was like Mad Max, like the new kind of Thunderdome to a degree, but on a lesser scale. And I just thought the combination of Suki Waterhouse, Jason Momoa, Keanu Reeves, who plays this character who came out of like a 1970s Playboy shag rugged mansion. And Jim Carrey, who like, you know, and who's Anthony Rowe, who's it, Ribisi's in it as well. Like, you don't even recognize who these people are until you read the credits. And you're like, holy shit, that was so, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm still thinking about it, and I'm glad we're doing this show because I'm hoping you'll come up with something that'll make me like it a little bit more.
I don't know that we're going to be able to help each other that much tonight, Bill.
So you didn't like it either. It was the Bad Batch left a bad taste in your mouth, Johnny?
Like you, Bill, I feel like it shot its load early on and just kind of left a bitter aftertaste for the rest of the runtime. But in any case.
Because to be honest, at one point I fell asleep.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and I don't fall asleep during movies. And I'm like, oh, man. And you know what I did? I didn't miss anything.
And I think that was, you know, Bill, and I'll just say this to your point, when Bill Meeker said that A Girl Walks Home at Night was pretentious. Well, I wouldn't go so far as to dismiss that film for that reason. I did feel like I agree with you in that it's a very beautiful film. The black and white cinematography is gorgeous.
Remarkable.
The aesthetic of that film is fantastic. Yeah. I think And I still think about it, and I do have a copy of it that I've been meaning to rewatch. But it's just kind of, I wasn't quite seeing as much in there as you were. And I think Dave Kay is a big fan of that film as well.
Right.
I was like, I really want to like this a lot. But I remember sitting there watching it thinking, it feels like it's going on just kind of maybe drifting in a way.
Oh, Johnny, no, you're so wrong.
Don't get me wrong. I think I would give, I mean, you get me wrong, but I would say it's like a 3 out of 5 for me, not like a 4.5 out of 5.
Well, it is for me a 4.5 out of 5. And, well, you see, that's also what I didn't like. What I didn't like is this.
Okay.
I felt like I was watching a different version of A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, because I'm like, to me, these are two stories about a sort of purgatory. And it's like, why? You know, why are we there again, it seems? Because that's what I felt like. These people are in this nowhere land, this nether world. But, you know, they're not all like killers and heathens, because some of them are nice people, it seems. You know, there's children, yeah. And there's a woman who runs a stand. You know, there's this old guy in a cart, you know, and he's like, you know, collecting crap, and he's keeping to himself. No one's being violent. And it's not like when you walk in there, it's not like Escape from New York. If you don't like join the right crew, you're not going to live another day, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah. So it's, you know, it felt like these people were just tossed into their own like netherworld, their own like, you know, and that was sort of, you know, that's part of what I saw in A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. So I'm like, why is she telling the same story in a different way?
Yeah. And, you know, Bill, For what I recall of Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, I was feeling the same way, in all honesty. I felt like there were a lot of retreaded themes and even characterizations for that matter, because something that bothered me about The Bad Batch mm-hmm. is that there was a certain flatness to, I feel, a lot of the characters in the film. Like they were very one note to me. I thought Arlen was a very one note character. I didn't feel like her journey, like you said, she's kind of on a journey to nowhere. And I mean, she doesn't really, I'm not saying she should have to, but she doesn't really like jump off the screen. She didn't really grab me as a character, even though she's kind of presented as this sort of pseudo badass character in a way.
Right. And I was wondering if that was part of what, Miss Amarpour wanted to do. I wondered if she wanted to like have these people who were supposedly the Bad Batch, you know, mm-hmm. and they were like, for the most part, just like, you know, whatever, because that was, there was a sense of, you know, apathy to it, but there, you know, there wasn't any like overly emotional stuff. Like even from, you know, Jason Momoa, who was like, you know, he's big badass. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, you know, like rolling with stuff, like whatever. And it's like, you know, yeah, like, and like there wasn't any, you know, swings in emotion except in the beginning. And that's what I liked, you know, Suki Waterhouse, she's freaking out, you know, she's like, where the hell am I? What's going on? Oh my gosh. What, you know, look what these people did to me. How do I escape from this? And, but there wasn't any like, man, I'm really pissed off. Like I need friggin' help because friggin' parts of my body are gone and people ate them. Like what the hell, you know? And it was just, didn't seem to be much reflection of the characters, you know?
Well, Bill, and that's a good point. I think you're sort of dancing around the edges of something here. And I think that's there's a real lack of narrative propulsion and a real lack of urgency in this film.
Completely. You're right.
It very much just kind of wanders along. There are scenes that go on for minutes, and some of them are pretty good, I'll admit. Like there's a mm-hmm. scene that I actually really love between the Miami man who's searching for Arlen and the what's his name? The Hermit, played by Jim Carrey, who
yeah.
I must say he doesn't say a word, and he is totally using that physical, like, what he used like for his physical comedy, he's mm-hmm. using in this film like crazy. And I think it's awesome to see him in this kind of,
he stole those scenes, man.
He really did. And it's like, I saw a poster that mentioned his name. So I was like, oh, Jim Carrey's in this. And then I had my suspicions that he was the Hermit before I got a clear look at his face. And I was nice. Like, yeah, He's the hermit, but he's awesome. And it's like, you're not distracted by the fact that it's Jim Carrey. Like, if this had been made in 97 instead of 2017, it might have been a different story, but.
Maybe, but like with the makeup and all, it's like I didn't recognize that it was him. I really didn't.
Yeah, and the scene I was referring to is where the Miami man is trying to find the whereabouts of this little girl, his daughter, and the hermit, who doesn't speak, he conveys with his body language what he wants the Miami man to do, and what he wants him to do is to draw a picture of him.
Yeah,
in this little steno pad. At first, you don't know what's going on because is the hermit using sign language or something?
Right.
And it's not until he strikes this pose and you see what the Miami man is doing that you know what's going on. And that scene goes on for a few minutes, I feel like saying, and it's a wonderful scene.
Oh, I agree with you. That was one of my favorites as well. It was just rock solid awesome.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I loved, you know, pulling back on the camera lens and looking at the bridge and the bridge people. It was funny because, the one gave us, it's one of those bridge people. And it's like, they hunt people for food because they have to.
Yeah.
You know, they're not like living on the edge like us. I think people should have been a lot thinner in comfort. But yeah. But what I liked about comfort is, okay, the world sucks. So what do you need? You need to dream, and you need to cling to a dream, and you need to do drugs, and you need to do music. I love the giant, super friggin' mega jukebox, sound box they had. And it's all like, hey, man, just party and just relax. You need the distraction because otherwise you're going to like blow your brains out. And it's like, it's funny because it's like Jason, it was like a Miami man. And his crew, they're living more in reality, okay, go do your drugs and shit, but we're going to starve and that's why I'm going to eat you, pretty much, it was almost like an argument for cannibalism, and it was weird because, and one of the things I did like about it was when the roads bring together, Miami man and Arlen, it's like, almost like a no harm, no foul kind of thing. And it's like, yeah, I know you're doing what you needed to do. And I'm doing what I need to do. And we're in this situation now where we're together in some weird fashion. And that's okay, too, because it's just the nature of the beast. And, in a lawless anarchy based state,
And it's sort of, Bill, you mentioned the cannibalism aspect and then how the two characters kind of line up in a way. It's sort of similar to the Hills Have Eyes, where it's like,
yeah.
Well, are these two sides really different in the end? And maybe a source of kind of a weakness for me was the fact that these themes are not new. And I didn't feel like there was really anything here that made them stand out or, put an extra layer of polish on them. It was just kind of like, I've seen it before. I've seen it done almost in an identical way in other movies. And that was kind of disillusioning for me. I did not like where it ultimately ended up as far as the ending was concerned. I was just like, it took us 2 hours to get to this point.
Of where do we go now?
And I was just kind of like, oh, well that's, I wasn't expecting the film to somehow satiate me by that point. But, something I did like, Bill, I'll try to keep on some positives here. The scene where Arlen is in comfort at the rave and she's just heard the dream give his spiel.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what,
Keanu.
With the John Wick films, with the Neon Demon, and with this, I really think Keanu is finally hitting his stride as an actor.
Oh, I thought he was awesome in this.
And you even said he has that like 70s porn stash too.
Man, yeah, with the glasses and all that. Like I could see him in a shag carpet with the boots, and like he needed all he needed was flares, and he would have been king, you know.
Yeah, and the thing was, I could see him being that type of, that type of, yeah, just follow me this way, kind of. Yeah. I am the way.
Yes, I am.
you know, what woman wouldn't be lining up to be impregnated by the dream? So, you know.
Dude, I was in line.
Yeah.
Impregnate me, but, you know, they kicked me out. I feel like, we're giving you the bridge, people. No! I don't want to go!
It's going to cost you an arm and a leg.
Boom. I know. It's like, was that a joke in there? You know,
I was like, womp, womp. Yeah, that's another thing. I'm sorry. But I did like how, okay, I will say I liked how Keanu was explaining the Bad Batch. It's like pretty much anybody who's different that society views as an undesirable. You don't have to be some one specific thing.
Right.
And it's like his viewpoint was that, and to get people to fall behind him and in line with him was to be like, you are all outcasts, but I accept you into my, you know,
cult.
Into my cult, into my little shanty town kind of. So, you know, but I was disappointed when I was like, oh, okay, it's yet another town in another movie that's kept afloat by the drug trade. And
yeah.
And there are a lot of really bad puns going around too.
Yeah. And, you know, I was like, okay, if this is a commentary on, you know, modern day United States, where things might be going and all this crap with our, because, you know, we don't, you know, we're a country without a president right now. And,
God, yeah.
And it's like, well, there should be fucking bones all over that desert, man. There should be bones, and there should be a lot of people, and a lot should be angry, and there should be a whole array of characters that don't. I liked that it was a milieu of people, but we didn't get a sense like there wasn't any characters that like seemed to represent any particular groups, and that would have been nice to have seen a little bit, you know, not for exploitation purposes, but to go, yeah, this is the gay part of town, and yeah, there's like there's a million of us because we're getting kicked out left and right or something.
Yeah.
Like that wasn't there. And I'm drawn back to a movie that I love that has never been released on DVD, that needed to be released 8 years ago, needs to be released now. It's called Rebel Storm or Rising Storm, and they covered a lot of this ground much, much better. And they covered it in a comedic fashion to a degree, but it was like an action movie, and it was about these group of people who were made wonderful comments. These guys were in jail because they were helping people get over the border to Mexico because they didn't want to get to where the freedom is.
Yeah.
And they were dealing in vitamin C because people needed vitamins, and it's like, so they're in jail for that. And that was really cool and unique. And then they go on this adventure because it's what Jimmy Joe III, who's the president, and it's a very it's a very right-wing Christian environment. And they're looking for the Caulfields. And the Caulfields are actually, Caulfield was a shock jock radio host, and he recorded this tape where he's like, this is the Constitution. This is our Declaration of Independence. This is who we are as Americans. Don't forget it. And he was like arrested and killed later because he didn't fit into the new regime. And they were going to find his tapes so they could unleash that message to everybody else and wake them up and start a revolution. That's a fucking movie. And people need to see that.
You know, Bill, and that's a good point. And I mean, I don't know what Ms. Amirpour was trying to necessarily accomplish with this.
And it's a shame that we can't figure that out.
Yeah, it's a good point because we can't really I can't even really maybe infer what it was getting at, just because the narrative just seemed to be so. I mean, I thought Easy Rider was a meandering movie, honestly, but you can kind of get at what some of the themes are that inspired that film, at least, even though a lot of them are very heavy handed. But with this one, I was just like, yeah, it's the end of the world. It sucks, but there's still good people out there. There's still bad people out there. Oh, sometimes we just have to spend some time and get some experience in this shared environment to see where our commonalities lie. And I'm like, again, it's, I didn't feel like there was anything new about that. I mean, oh, we have a scene with Miami Man and Arlen next to a campfire that is so fucking beautifully shot, I must say.
Yes, yes.
Oh my God, Suki Waterhouse looks absolutely stunning. Delicious. in that scene.
Yeah.
She is, the way she is lit in that scene, and Jason Momoa for that matter.
Oh yeah, oh God, man, he's freaking awesome, man.
He is a handsome man, but I would not want to cross him. That's
no,
sure.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I was like, there's some gorgeous filmmaking going on here, like on an audiovisual level.
Right.
But I'm like,
story wise, a lot of wasted opportunities in the wasteland. That's what I saw.
Pretty much. It was like, oh, okay, well, it's like I haven't seen characters bond over a campfire before. And, you know, I've
breaking bread.
The campfire scene in Blade Runner 2049. Now there is a good scene where nobody says anything and so much information is imparted. So,
yeah.
But you know, there were times when I was thinking there, these very Tarantino-esque moments in the film.
Mm.
And they actually, I found them kind of distracting, like where the dream gives this several minute monologue about the function of shit in the world.
Yeah.
Like literally feces. And I'm like, this is like trying way too hard to be
exactly
clever. And it's like, you're hitting me in the face with a claw hammer. Okay.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. No, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. It was subtle poetry and it was beautiful and it was well done. It was like, you know, you and I were talking a little bit about, you know, Blade Runner 2049, that, you know, horror wise, that was like, to me, though, they would match in that realm, and people could argue that all they want. But this movie, it was almost like, I want to say something, but fuck it, let's go, roll it. You know, I was like, whoa, wait a minute. It sounded like the script needed a couple of more reads, man. You know, it really did. It was just something was lost in there, and it's a shame because I think she's amazing and talented, and I just think that, you know, this one just didn't cut it at all. It's just,
Bill, I did feel that scenes went on for too long, or it was like this weird, paradox going on with this film, because you would have the scenes like some of the ones I was mentioning where it's like, it's a couple minutes where there's little to no dialogue and a lot of expression.
Right.
Then you have stuff that's like really dialogue heavy, like the dream's monologue to Arlen when she's. And, you know, it was like this back and forth between some really arresting visuals, I thought. You know, right. there were some moments where it was like, The film didn't like hook me from the start. It took some watching, and me getting into the film was entirely dependent on what was going on at the time. And maybe that's speaking to my problem with the film's lack of focus, is that periodically I would be hooked in and then I would be like tossed out of it because it would shift to something else. Like, there's an early scene where Arlen's like in a trailer and she's looking at like a porno mag.
Right.
And she's cutting something out of it. And this is after she's lost her arm and you don't know what she's doing. And then she like puts up this sliver of the magazine that's like just of one of the model's arms. And she does this weird, like slanted pose in front of the mirror that I really liked, because I was is this her trying to like normalize herself?
Right.
Or, you know, I really like something like that. I actually really like even though this is another thing that's been done to death, the whole acid trip scene midway through.
Right.
I thought that was very visually arresting. And I was swept up in that for a couple of minutes. And then after that bit of visual flair was over with, we were thrust back into, you know, tedious pointless existence. Maybe that was part of the point.
Maybe that was it too, because everybody was so numb. And like, even like, you know, like, you know, Miami Man, I gotta find my daughter. But it wasn't like, oh man, my daughter. You know, like, there was no, it was just like, all right, I'm gonna get on my bike. I think I know where they are, and I'm gonna kill whoever's near and take my kid back and go home and take a nap and maybe draw a picture. It's like, okay, dude, like, no emotion at all. Like, do you really love her? Do you really care? Or is it just like, you know, she's a property and you just want her back? Like, dude, give me back my watch. You know, it's just like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, and that is a good point, Bill. And I don't know if that's speaking to like, oh, just like a kind of cooler than thou mentality. It's like, well, he's the Miami Man. He's Jason Momoa.
Yeah, but they were all like that.
Yeah, they are.
So it's like, is she saying, hey, man, you know, all of you people who are being discarded are, you know, you're acting like you're numb. Why don't you freaking wake up and do something about it? Because I even one of the things that I was thinking of was like, there were no guards at that fence. They kicked her through it. And it's like, I could fucking climb that fence and get back over. But do you want to? Do you want to go back to where you're not wanted? Or like, you know, so like, what is it? Like, you know, get off your ass and do something? Fine. Then show them getting off their ass and doing something. Show them tearing down the fucking fence.
Yeah.
Do something.
And, yeah. It's like, tear down the wall or whatever. Yeah. So, but something else, Bill, and maybe this is a positive.
Mr. Trump, tear down that wall. Sorry, go ahead.
And maybe we can wrap up Bad Batch on this note.
Yeah, I'd like to.
I noticed the lack of, you know, Arlen is not a character who's objectified, and I found that kind of interesting.
That's true.
The female characters, well, you do have these female characters in supporting roles who kind of just serve as reproductive vessels for the dream.
Yep.
And
cream dream, baby.
Pretty much. But something I liked about Arlen was like, well, I'm sure like if Michael Bay had directed this film, all those from behind shots literally would have kind of a different feel and a different vibe, but I kind of like the oddball shorts she wears, including the iconic winking face.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like it's the character is like kind of, she's totally desexualized, I would say. Like, Yeah, it's kind of, it just was kind of interesting to me. And I was wondering if that was Miss Amirpour's touch with the film, just because it's like, maybe that winking face is like, oh, you thought you were going to be getting off on looking at a girl's ass. Well, I'm not going to play that game, sort of, which I can admire, you know, in a movie.
So. I still thought she was hot, even though she only had one arm and one leg. I didn't care. I'm just saying, you know. No, I get where, yeah, it's just... yeah, there just wasn't enough meat there after that first act to, you know, go, oh, this is what I ordered, you know, this is what I'm getting. It just, yeah, I don't know. But that's it. Johnny, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
You're contemplating. You can't go into a Zen moment, Johnny, when we have a show going on, man.
Well, Bill, what did you, if we're wrapping up the Bad Batch, what would you give this film on a scale of 1 to 5?
Well, before I say that, Rising Storm, 1989, it's a freaking 4-star movie plus, and that's by Francis Schaeffer, man. So anyway, everybody could find that. And for the Bad Batch, I gave it 2 out of 5.
Okay. I was unfortunately pretty dissatisfied with this one, and I think I feel some of your pain with this one, Bill. And it might be because I was coming from a place where I wasn't as big a fan of A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. This was a 1.5 out of 5 for me.
I gotcha. That sucks. But yeah, 1.5, 2. I mean, it doesn't matter at this point. You know, it's just crazy.
Which brings us to our next film in our double feature show. We're going to be talking about Julia Ducournau's 2016 film, Raw.
I'm hungry right now.
What are you hungry for, Bill?
Well, I don't think I can. I don't think it, what I would, what I wanted to, what I'm hungry for is probably illegal in every country on earth.
What is it, Bill? A hippopotamus?
Nah, been there, done that.
Bill, you're not getting anywhere near my pussies, okay?
Johnny, this is not a family show.
I know. We suddenly earned our PG-13 podcast rating anyway. Oh, man.
Boy, I'm glad we're not measuring dicks. And that was it, ladies and gentlemen, from 2017.
Oh. And in any case, Raw, which is...
what is it good for?
Sorry. Yeah, you know, outside of being one of the most puntastic titles of of the horror year.
Man.
It is a fascinating French-Belgian film that deals with Justine, played wonderfully by Garance Marié. Mm-hmm.
Don't forget Italy. Italy is a tri-production.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Viva Italia, baby.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, Wikipedia just says French-Belgian.
Sons of bitches.
Horrible omission there.
Yeah.
But in any case, Justine is a very devout vegetarian. And she decides to follow in the family footsteps. She's out of high school and she's looking to learn her trade at the local veterinary college. So, you know, you can tell right away there's going to be heavy symbolism and
a little bit.
Just a little bit. And sort of a coming of age film mixed in with all the horror aspects. As it turns out, her sister, I believe, is a year or so older than her. Mm-hmm. And she's also attending the school. And Bella it turns Rumpf. Great. Yeah, her sister's name is Alexia.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a bit of an odd couple, and the school is a bit of an odd school, if you know what I mean.
Oh, man.
It's a bit like, you know, it's a bit like Animal House and Project X had a baby, I guess. I don't know.
All I kept thinking was, man, why didn't I go to vet school?
It's like every... I don't... Bill, do you remember how long the film takes place over? Is it like a semester?
Or it's not. It's not a complete semester. But yeah. I just yeah.
It's pretty much a
few weeks or something.
Yeah, you think it was less vet school than hazing school? Because it's all about the. Very exaggerated, even though it's a French film, Hollywood notions of what life on a college campus is like. Pretty much right from they hit the ground running after Justine gets dropped off by her parents.
Yeah, dropped off for real.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, good luck to you. And it's kind of fascinating, I think. Like, there's a bit of an... There's an early scene that I really like, which is part of the initial hazing process, where the pledges or the freshmen are made to like crawl on their hands and knees to this rave. And I liked a couple, I liked a couple of things about this. One, I think it's like their first night, everybody's first night. And, that scene where they're reverting to like that animal, like state of, you know, you're not right. allowed to walk upright. Not only does it tie into like the whole notion of it's vet school, it's you're here for the animals, it also reminded me a lot of that one scene in Sallow where
oh yeah oh god yeah
Yeah, where the fascists have all the kids naked on leashes and they're making them do dog tricks basically for for scraps of food. So there's definitely some of that going through that sequence. And then when Justine finally makes it to the rave, something I liked about Ducournau's aesthetic choice was that I think it feels like one unbroken shot.
Mm-hmm.
And Justine is a very tiny girl. She's sort of like Jenna Malone, only smaller than Jenna Malone. But it's like once she gets to the rave, she's like essentially getting pushed from person to person and room to room because she's so small and nobody's paying attention. And it's like, she's not there until finally she's pushed in the direction of her sister and the family dog who's made the trip as well. But in any case, Bill, I'm getting ahead of myself here. I had good feelings about Raw, like good feelings in the fact that I thought it was a good film. It actually made me it actually had a weird effect on my constitution while I was watching it, I guess you could say.
Well, Johnny.
But I want to know what your initial impressions were and maybe how you felt about the film.
Mm. Well, after the opening scene, where she mistakenly gets a piece of meat in her mashed potatoes and her mom goes apeshit and then she's dropped off. I'm like, I was just ejected from the reality of it immediately because the hazing at this school is absolutely insane. It's as if the crazy people have taken over the asylum. Forget professors being around. You have these senior kids who upended and pretty much destroyed the whole damn school. And it's that's okay. And I'm like, this would not happen anywhere on earth. And it's a veterinary school. It's prestigious. It's what? I was just and I'm not knocking vets or what they go through. I mean, I love animals and what they go through is incredibly hard. I can't imagine the necropsies that they have to do and, on animals and stuff. But I'm like, this is just, I couldn't buy into it. I couldn't buy into the reality. And then what, she's sharing a room with a guy at school? That's not going to happen. And it's like, it was just I was so like I said, ejected. I was just so taken out of it. Not that, I did love the dialogue. I loved the cinematography by Ruben Impens is just phenomenal. But and the characters, were cool, but I thought the story was just so over the top that I couldn't really get back into it.
Well, Bill, let me bring up a film that the two of us actually like, and I think has a little bit of the DNA of Raw in common.
You're going to try and rope me into liking this, aren't you?
I'm not going to try to rope you into anything, Bill, but, it would really help if you ate this raw rabbit kidney. Come on. you know you want to. Come on.
I do, actually. Bring it, man!
You brought up a good point about how it's like the lunatics running the asylum. I definitely agree with that. And something that I really dislike, a trope I really hate in movies, whether it's a comedy or a drama or a horror film, is this exaggerated notion of the college experience. I say personally, we're living in a time of extremes right now. I say any screenwriter who falls back on that tired trope of the sadistic fraternity or sorority or the catty sorority or whatever, just could you launch these screenwriters into the sun, please? Because it's tired. It's been done to death. That being said, I feel like Raw does distinguish itself. I feel like the exaggeration that you were talking about kind of at the beginning, Bill, with her and her really fundamentalist, strict adherence to vegetarianism. I I had my doubts once she got to that school and once it turned into Party Central, like from the get-go.
Insane Central, man.
Yeah, pretty much. It doesn't even look like fun college. It looks like watch your step because someone's going to stab you in the back, like literally college.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Duke Renau created this really insular, unique world. And I think she found an interesting spin on sort of the tired notions of the fraternity and the hazing. But something to what you said about the lack of supervision and these kids being left off the leash, so to speak.
Definitely.
You know, I was thinking of Massacre at Central High, where in a lot of the same ways, it's like you don't see an adult in that movie until the very last act of that film.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that film was really strong in presenting what it presented. Granted, that was back right in the mid-70s, and compared to Raw, I think it's probably not quite as extreme as some of the extremes Raw goes to.
But. Right, but I don't mind that. I don't mind the lack of adultness, but it was so vast, so okay, widespread, this hazing, so destructive to the institution itself,
mm-hmm,
throwing the mattresses out the window, and no, you can't put them back in your room, and they got to stay out there, and they're like, what? Dude, you kidding me? No, it's not fucking happening anywhere, man. It's not happening in France. It's not happening in Belgium, Italy, or the United States. It's not going to happen. It was so extreme. It was just so costly. And they were acting like this is the veterinary school of all veterinary schools on the entire earth. And once you graduate here, you're going to end up making like $250,000 a year somewhere. And it's like, what? It was just so... like over the top, I was just automatically recoiling.
But did you sit through the rest of the movie, Bill?
I did. And my friend who I was watching it with, she fell asleep. and she's like, what'd I miss? And I was like, I don't know. And because the thing that bugs me about this movie, we haven't talked about it yet, but okay, I think we need to talk about it now. The hype about this thing.
Okay.
Because I was talking to my friend Vicky Spiegel, who's has this wonderful In the Night, I Remember Your Name documentary coming out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she likes horror movies and we're doing a Poe thing together and all this stuff. She was like, oh, I can't see that. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, I heard it's like, you know, so disturbing, these scenes and the blood and the gore. And I'm like, what the frick? What the hell? That's a bunch of crap. Yeah. And then I hear at the one viewing that they had of it, they were handing out like vomit bags. Like, get out of here. These people never saw a freaking horror movie before? Sallow, that you need a barf bag for, or at least a therapist at the end of it. This one, yeah, it's like so overhyped in that regard. It just really ticked me off. I'm like, what? Because I didn't know until after I watched the movie, and I'm like, get out. Man, that means I would have hated it more watching it.
Well, Bill, I was going to say, is the whole barf bag thing, they did it?
Yeah, I think it was at the premiere, and I don't know if Julie was handing them out herself or not, but it was like, really? Seriously? Come on.
Well, you know, I think anytime something like that is employed, and actually, I didn't know
that's Saloon Castle, man.
Well, I didn't know that story. I was thinking it was some theater owners were just like trying to piggyback off the hype surrounding like the story of someone fainting in the theater or whatever. I didn't think it was the actual filmmakers.
Yeah, because I heard people were running out of the premiere like they couldn't handle it, and I'm like, what? What were these like? Hello, you've only watched G movies for your entire life. This is your first horror movie. Here you go. Okay, maybe I could see a reaction from Sheltered Souls, but come on, man. Come on.
Well,
ludicrous.
Let me say this.
Say it, Johnny.
Sense. Yeah. I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with what you're saying. And, you know, to further your point, I picked this movie up at Walmart of all places, which, you know, that's a whole hypocritical side story worth getting into as to how mm-hmm. they stock certain music and certain movies, yeah, but insist on neutering other stuff. But yeah, Raw passed the MPAA with an R rating. And so it's not like it's some unrated, like, Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer or, you know,
Serbian film
or Salo or whatever. Yeah. It's not. Yeah, it's not like it's in those leagues, you know, at all. I mean, I think things, you know, within the past decade or so, or actually maybe two decades at this point, I think the ratings board is actually a bit more permissible with a lot of stuff than maybe when they were in the 90s or the 80s. Hmm. But, you know, that's just kind of like, yeah, I see that. And I don't think the film, you know, it didn't make me want to throw up. It didn't particularly scare me. But I do think the film had kind of inspired a raw response in me nonetheless.
And why, Johnny? How did it, where did it get to you? How did it touch your, tickle your soul, whatever? How did it happen? What happened? Well,
you know, I had my doubts because, like you said, Bill, you heard The Hype Machine before this film came out.
Or no, I didn't.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I just heard like, oh, you should see it. That's it. I heard the hype after I saw it. And I'm like, you're kidding me, right?
Oh, okay. Because I know I heard people online who'd seen it. They were talking it up. And I'd seen relatively, I probably surfed onto Rotten Tomatoes and saw the consensus there as well.
Before I watched it, the only hype I heard was from Greg Palko from Palko Designs, who said, he watched it for like an hour and he said, I just couldn't take it anymore. He said, I had to like go to the bathroom or something. He just shut it off. You know, it's just like, it's just like ridiculous. And he just got out.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay. Yeah.
Oh yeah. He was not a fan.
You know what? I'm surprised Greg listens to us because we seem to, bat 1,000 with the stuff he likes.
He likes cool shit, man.
Oh no, absolutely. I'm glad we have guys and girls like Greg and other people who listen to us and are like, yeah, I don't agree with these guys, but I'm gonna listen to them anyway. Yeah. So that's the sign that your podcast is a success, Bill.
Whatever. Anyway, so why does this thing resonate with you, Johnny? How come it worked? How come you loved it?
Well,
what am I missing, man? What did I miss?
I was kind of with you, especially near the beginning and especially after watching The Bad Batch, you know, the day before this, because I was like, I heard a lot of good stuff or at least more positive stuff about The Bad Batch. And it really let me down. So,
oh, yeah.
When this one started and it was like, OK, it's cliched Hollywood dorm room party sort of thing. I was kind of getting a bit defensive about it, or mm-hmm. offensive, I guess you could say, because I was like, oh, is this going to be one of those? And as it went along, I found myself getting more and more. I can't think of a better way to say it. I got wrapped up in the story and Justine's character.
Like bacon around a chicken liver.
Oh, absolutely. It's like bacon peeled right from the pig. Yeah.
Oh my God, Johnny, you sick bastard.
but I was like, I think an important aspect of this film is if you had the wrong person in that lead performance, you would have had, I mean, obviously you didn't like the movie, but you could have had a really like someone like me who liked it. It might have been a really lesser experience if you didn't have someone who could control, hit the specific beats of character and the metamorphosis and change she goes through as she continues to spend time on campus.
And her coming of rage story.
Yeah.
Well, no, you know, I did love the characters. I loved. It's funny because the only thing that disappointed me was the elements of story. To me, it needed some work, mm-hmm. and especially in regard to that over the topness. But you know, I was just thinking, like, all I kept thinking the whole time, I can't wait for Julia Ducournau's next movie. Like, that's all that I was thinking for me, because I'm like, I hope she gets it right the second time around. You know, because I even love him. One of my favorite characters in there was Rabah Nate Ufala, who played Adrian. He was just killing it. And that was another problem, too. One of the rules when you're writing a script, when you're writing any story where there's a bunch of names being thrown around, you don't want similar names, you know, back to back. And there was Alexia and Adrian, and it was just, and I remember my friend, when she woke up, like, did she call him Adrian? Isn't he Alex? You know, she just got, she was like, so she wasn't even drinking. She was bored. And that was sad.
Well, it's like, I just feel so sad for, I feel sad for the two of you, Bill. I feel sad for Greg Palko too. I think this is a great movie.
But
and I feel
like tell me why, tell me why.
The only one saying it's great.
Why, Johnny, why is it great? Convince me.
Well, like I said, I loved, Marie's character. She really, I would say she anchors the film, and, I forget who played Alexia. Ella Rumpf.
Ella Rumpf, yep.
Yeah, I did buy into the sister-sister relationship with the two of them. Mm-hmm. Even though they seem like polar opposites, I think as the film progresses, I feel like you see where Alexia initially came from, because that's essentially what Justine is going through, you know, as we're watching.
Yeah, sort of. It was both a coming of age, rite of passage thing, but you know,
say it, Bill. Say it.
I'm saying it like this. I'm saying, like, what was that vampire movie that everybody loved that I freaking hated? The one with Gemma Arterton.
Oh, Byzantium.
Yeah, Byzantium. I mean, come on. You know, it was just like, you know, you're just like, I'm a vampire. Oh, we just killed somebody. Okay, let's go someplace else. Like, whoa, clean up, man. What, you got a cleanup crew back there that I didn't see? Like, who's cleaning up this shit? You know, you can't, like, take a bite out of somebody and, like, walk away and not, like, have a police investigation. You know, it's like, not, you know, like, what the hell, man?
Bill, it wasn't that kind of movie.
Oh, but it was just like, it was just so, like, left to, like, oh yeah, whatever. And it's like, but right from the beginning, I wasn't put in a position to maybe excuse that. Right from the beginning, it was like, this can't happen. And it's like, but then why are you showing this to me? Why you didn't create a universe where I could buy into it? You know what I mean? That's what bothered me.
Well, I admit that that can be a problem, but I also think that that sometimes
Go ahead. They weren't careful. You know, if you're going to be this insane person way off the grid doing this crazy stuff that's unacceptable, taboo in every culture, you can't just be all, and I hate to use the word, willy-nilly about it. You can't, you know, it's like, dude, if I did what they did, it would be like, I'd be caught in 3 seconds. It's like, oh, you're under arrest. Yeah, but I didn't. I thought my minions would have cleaned up the mess. Well, they didn't. You know what I mean? It's like, come on. So I had a hard time buying into the whole, how are they going to get out of this? Like, how come they're not getting caught? And it was like, none of that was there. It was like they were in their own little petri dish, their own little test tube within this entire, you know, scientific institution of animal learning. And I was like, come on, man. Things were just ignored. And I was like, no, you can't. You can't ignore them.
So you're saying there had to be, like, to make it more plausible, like an administration would have to step in and say, like, oh, well, you can't do this. You kids are on double secret probation or whatever.
Not to step in, but they would have to be careful so they wouldn't get caught.
Okay.
And they weren't being careful.
Yeah.
They were being like, and why would the parents, like, go, like, have, like, some, they wouldn't have, they didn't have a plan in place in case the one daughter went bonkers when she had a freaking rabbit liver, a rabbit kidney. Like, oh, that could set her off. Yeah, don't worry, your sister will take care of it. Yeah, good job. Way to go. Like, what the hell, man? Like, talk about bad parenting, man.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like that's part of the theme here, Bill.
I know it is.
It goes down that rabbit trail.
Follow that white rabbit down the hole there, you know. But anyway, it was just too many loose. There was, like, loose story ends that were just left to be loose because it's like, well, it doesn't fit the main thing that I'm doing. So, you know, we could excuse those. No, I can't excuse that shit.
You know, there was one thing I did have a problem with, and it occurs later in the film, and I'm not sure if I just missed something for a second.
You probably didn't. You probably had a sober moment.
Well, it's the only thing I had an issue with, and it was the – and I guess it's a slight spoiler, but maybe not. It's Adrian's sudden decision to bed Justine late in the game.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, that too. My friend Cheryl was like, what is that? Why is this happening? Why is this happening now? I'm like, does it matter? Because there were so many things that were just like off the mark that weren't well thought out plot-wise, story-wise.
Go ahead.
No, and that didn't – that was like – you know, that was another one where like, what the hell, man? Was it because he had a chance to like, you know – do something with a virgin? I don't know, but I don't know, man. Most of the gay men I know are like, they wouldn't really like want to indulge in something like that. And he didn't come. He never mentioned at any point that he was bi or he might like, okay, just for you. Like there was just no indication. It was just so out of left field.
Yeah, and that was like the only thing I kind of like did a double take on, honestly.
Well, I'm glad something did.
Yeah, I mean, and in all honesty, I didn't have too much of an issue with it, because if it would have been pulled like 5 minutes before the end of the movie, I might have taken issue with it. But it had some time to – there was some time for that relationship to breathe for whatever it was in that movie.
To breathe until it stopped breathing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw the end coming, man. When the end happened, it was like, oh, here it is. Here's what's going to – oh, there it is. And then Raw comes on screen, and I was like
– Oh, Bill. Oh, Bill.
But why – so really, man, why – what
– Do you want me to tell you all the stuff I liked about this movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I know Dave Kay liked this too. I think he gave it 7 out of 10. So that's 3.5 out of 5, so –
Yeah, and I would honestly...
That's a fiend on film, if people don't know, yes.
Absolutely, and if you don't know him now, you will.
Oh yeah, you will.
You will know him by the trail of the raw meat.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, essentially, you know, back to what I said about how the film, it's one of those movies that really, after the first couple of minutes, it really just kind of swept me up. I didn't care that I got to a point very quickly that I didn't care that this was essentially sallow training for these kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just was like, I sort of laid my consciousness before the film and said, just do with me what you will. Just you.
Wow. You,
yeah. I was just Jeez, like, Johnny. It, you've got me. Do whatever you want.
So this like touched you on a sexual level, man.
In some weird ways, yeah, if we want to get really personal about it.
I think we just did.
Well, you know, a scene that has stuck with me.
Please.
And a scene that's a really interesting transition point in the movie. I think it occurs at like the halfway point. Alexia has given, earlier in the movie, she's given Justine like a dress to wear to like a social function.
Right.
And Justine's like, this dress isn't me. There's this awkward scene of her like trying it on while Alexia stands there. But then at the midpoint of the movie, after Justine has developed a taste for raw meat and is sort of going down the crazy trail, there's this several minute scene where she's like listening to this song with these really vulgar lyrics on
yeah,
her.
Yeah, yeah, that was cool.
On her iPhone.
I and want that song. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, what is that song? It's like, fuck 69, give me 666 or something like that.
I was like, yeah, I was automatically in love right there too. So I can't argue that point.
Yeah. And to me, that was, that whole sequence was like a self seduction in a way. She's like looking at herself in the mirror thinking she's the shit. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, she's adapting to the kind of savage nature of the campus by, mm-hmm. you know, through this scene. I like how it alternates between Duke Renal's like looking at her, looking at the mirror, and then occasionally it's the camera is the mirror looking at her. And, she's just like laying lipstick kisses on the camera lens and everything like that.
Yeah.
But I really thought, you know, that scene was like, it's off-putting at the same time, because I think there's something to the film about the notion of eating raw stuff and the actual physiological effects of it.
Mm.
That kind of, I think that kind of got to me on a very primal level, because another film, and I was trying to think of it, and I'm so glad I remembered it before we started recording, was the remake of We Are What We Are.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I mean, I know you weren't a big fan of that one either, but
no, the original was better, but still, either one was like, eh.
But I kind of liked how those two films they dealt with modern day cannibals, and a big part of the remake I felt was well, what happens when you eat too much or you've been deprived and that's all you've been eating, kind of, and what are the physiological effects of that? So that's something that, you know, made my stomach a little queasy with this film, because I thought that the rendering of rendering of that sort of behavior was, whether or not it has a basis in reality for in, as far as Ducournau decided to film it, it did have an effect on me sort of by proxy, just watching what these characters were going through. Right. And I like that a lot. And I felt like it made Justine kind of a tricky character, because she's like, well, at the beginning, she's the innocent waif virgin kind of. And then as the film progresses, she becomes, you know, more empowered, but kind of there's that notion of absolute power and corrupt, you know, being corrupted, and tying that into like corruption is its own kind of disease and everything, as she kind of just further deteriorates as a person.
Right. Well, is she deteriorating as a person, or is it because she's becoming what she is? We are what we are, you know? And like, irresponsible parenting. Well, I could see like the parent, like the father going, well, you know, it's going to happen. Shut up. You know, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. But you know, shouldn't we like, you know, maybe no, shut up. It'll be fine. Like what the hell's wrong with you people?
Bill, you know, if this movie had taken place in Vegas, we could have just wrapped it up like The Hangover, and it would have been like, happens in Vegas, stays in Vegas.
Yeah, exactly. And
then that's the last word on things.
What happens at vet school? Like, I don't know. But the one thing I thought was funny and cool was, you know, her name's Justine, which is a nice take. It's almost like Justine's revenge from being subjugated by the Marquis de Sade.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like, oh, this is Justine let loose, you know. She, coming of age, coming of rage story, you know, and she pops out on her own, and she's going for it. And, you know, there's going to be much blood and meat in her wake.
Yeah, and you know, Bill, I know how I talk on this show very often about how I hate movies and filmmakers who do nothing but call back to like particularly like the 80s. You know, it's like, oh, we made an 80s movie. It's like, yeah. No, you didn't make an 80s movie. You. Yeah. Anyway.
Like Tarantino make it a 70s movie, right?
Yeah. It's like the same difference. I'm like, I have no problem if you're making a movie, but do you really have to blatantly, flagrantly just borrow pieces and very blatant pieces without adding anything new to them? That's where I have a problem with. Yep. But
it's just like handing in a plagiarized paper, Johnny.
Absolutely.
I cited all the sources. Yeah, but you cut and paste from three articles. Well, isn't that a paper? No, it is not. Sorry, that was the teacher coming through.
Citations are important. Yeah. Well, Bill, something that I did like a lot about Raw was the little genre winks throughout the film. And I might be the only one who was noticing some of these. So anybody out there who's also seen Raw, please feel free to correct me or tell me what you think. I think a reason I might've liked this one so much is that Justine reminded me an awful lot of Kiernan Shipka's character in The Black Coat's Daughter. And that they're both like very small statured, very
unassuming, unassuming.
Oh, very, yeah, well put. Yeah. Just like they're very, very timid at first, but they eventually grow into something, you know, something more threatening, more dangerous. And,
and they embrace. They embrace who they are, and they don't, you know, and wait, don't go.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was the, that was like one of the coolest moments, man. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, and there were, there was some moments where Ducournau films Justine like under the blankets of her bed.
Yeah, yeah, that was pretty wild. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that reminded me a lot, I mean, very indirectly, it kind of reminded me of Tony Scott's The Hunger, like where Catherine Deneuve is telling Susan Sarandon, you know, well, you can avoid this for as long as you want to, but eventually the hunger is going to become so awful, you'll be like, you know, knocking my door down, basically, you know, to get your fix, in a way. I love the scene like where she's out, I guess in the quad or what, not the quad. It's where the guys are playing like basketball or whatever. And she's watching Adrian and she's wearing her mad scientist lab coat and everything.
Yes, yes, yes. I like that.
Yeah. And she's just kind of watching things and then her nose starts to bleed. There were these really, these moments where she reminded me a lot of Herbert West from Reanimator, at least Stuart Gordon's Reanimator. There's that aspect of mad science at work here. And we were talking about the sex scene of that comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Something I did, I thought that was very well acted. And I thought Marie was really excellent. She reminded me of another movie where sex plays heavily into like awakening the beast within. And that was the remake of Cat People with,
you know,
where essentially it comes down to like, well, yeah, the ending to that movie is really interesting. The sexual politics are probably very problematic by today's standards with that movie, but I thought that I think that's a really interesting that's a really interesting take on a human transforming into the other, transforming into an animal, and perhaps not being able to help, or perhaps there not being a solution to it.
What does this say about, like, you know, does this say anything about women in general? Or I would say no, but it's like, I think this interesting, this character gets a taste of flesh and suddenly it's like, I must eat men. It's like, holy mother. It's like, you know, she goes from virgin to freaking nymphomaniac in like, you know, 0.1 seconds. It's like, shit, man. Damn. That's intense stuff, man.
Yeah, and I mean, I think everything in the film is like a just an escalation of that. You know, it's like that raw rabbit kidney is the gateway drug, and I mean, you can interpret that as the roofie or whatever that, you know, that turns Justine into what she eventually becomes. I mean, I do think there is definitely a sexual element to all of this. It's definitely played up during the party scenes, of course.
Right.
But Justine, just as a character, she makes it extremely awkward. You know, even to the point where her sex scene is extremely, it's not a prurient thing. It's very much like okay, Adrian, you like to live dangerously, obviously, but, you know, it's like, okay, it's not like sexy sex.
Right.
Yeah. It's not like Hollywood sexy sex. So,
yeah. What I also like about her character, as she changes and she grows, she gets taller. If you notice in the movie,
you know, her her posture does change. Her she develops a more of an adult, I know shit now demeanor, and you know, she starts smoking, and like she becomes like, you know, you can almost see her with a martini in the other hand. You know, like, you know, it's like. And so I thought that was interesting, where it was an internal and external change. It was, you know, she became something other, you know, than what she was. And that I thought was cool. But
go ahead.
No, you go ahead, man.
Well, and I mean, to that end, you know, talking about becoming the other Bill, and I was even thinking of Ginger Snaps, which,
oh, hell yeah,
deals with some of the same,
but better, much better.
Well, I won't deny that Ginger Snaps is a better movie, but
okay, good. At least we got that. That's a good.
Yeah,
there is hope right now. I could hear Greg Palko sighing all the way from friggin' New Jersey, man.
Bill, I think Greg Palko stopped listening to this after 2 minutes of me talking about it. Yeah,
I gotta send him a message now, Greg. Man, listen to the whole friggin' show.
If nothing else, this is definitely a show of dissent between the two of us.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, I think I didn't feel like Raw was like ripping off of all those films I was mentioning. I think it really found its own voice, and that's what I liked so much about it. And I like the silliness, like you said, of how Justine is more of a, like, oh, she's more naive. She's kind of sheltered when we first meet her. What I love is how she's wearing this really obvious t-shirt of a unicorn, and then later on,
yeah,
we see
virginal symbol,
and then, you know, we see Alexia wearing the same shirt later on. I like that too. It's like, well, I was right. Once that unicorn as well.
Wow, ride the unicorn, baby. Anyway, no, I was doing a little bit of research, and it seems like what happened at the one film festival, the Gutenberg Film Festival in Germany, apparently people fainted and all this stuff. And they had to, you know, call paramedics and whatnot, and they had to stop the film for a while. But then I read from The Guardian, which to me is a very viable source, saying that no, it was Toronto Film Festival and it happened. And now I'm wondering, is it just a story, or did it really happen? And I don't know, but I don't know. But I think, you know, you're making comparisons to these other films, which I think is fine. And when you're dealing with a basic, when you think about it, what is it? It's basically a coming of age tale. So it's like, how different can it really be in so many ways, even if it's horror genre? You know, it's like, okay, well, still the person's becoming something else. You know, there's a, even have a coming of age in a very bizarre way with Kirsten Dunst's character in Interview with the Vampire. You know, she, what, 5 years old or six or eight or seven or whatever, she's turned into a vampire, and it's like, you know, she's got to like adapt, and then she's pissed off. She's like, I'm a woman trapped in a little girl's body. This sucks. It's like, yeah, you know, I don't want another doll, you know.
or then you think about something like Let the Right One In, which has sort of similar thing going on. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That I thought that, you know, coming of age tales, you know, that would be one of my, actually, that's one of my favorites. But, you know, when you really look at it, that's not, well, maybe that's another show, coming of age horror stories. I'll save it. I'll save the chat.
Oh, let's do that next week, Bill.
Okay.
No, seriously, because I think there's a lot of
movies to mine.
Oh, yeah. And you know what I was going to say? I'm really a sucker for coming of age films, and I agree with what you said about how structurally a lot of them tend to be the same. It's what the character, you know, are the characters original? Are there some original scenarios that they're put into? That's kind of what determines whether it's a good coming of age film or just one to throw on the pile, kind of.
And on that note, with Raw, I wouldn't want to go over to family's house for dinner. If they invite you over for dinner, man, they'll just toss your shoes into the friggin' garbage pail. And that's all that remains, man. It's like, it's over.
Bill, I gotta say this. By the end of that movie, like the last 30 seconds of it, I started to laugh because I was like, I don't know if it was just like, it was just the result of the madness I'd experienced watching this movie or what.
Were you
just
drinking? Like,
just because of like, I had totally subscribed totally and completely to what do I want to call it? Exaggerated logic, mm-hmm. or illogic to the right. point where I was like, oh, I just loved the ending so much. And it was like just an absurd laughter moment for me. And like you said, then it's like, boom, it cuts into the credits and the creepy sort of Halloween house music.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Which I really like the music by Jim Williams, even though it for like sometimes you listen to it and it's like, man, this doesn't seem complimentary to what's going on screen. But I think I actually think it works very beautifully and sometimes to a intentionally comedic effect. And I like that.
Well, I like, you know, the music works because, well, like you said, you know, there was some contrast and I like those contrasts because, you know, think about it, you know, the coming of age, you're making this transition. It's mm-hmm. a quirky one. It's just like when your body goes through its physical changes, it's like, you know, your voice cracks. And like, oh, you know, you're becoming a man. It's like, shut the fuck up. You know, it's embarrassing enough. You know, and we know what we're all going through. It's like, oh, time for a training bra. Like, you know, I could see like, you know, young women like throwing like rocks at their father and shit, you know, it's just like, get away from me. Or like,
seriously, the thing of coming of age, just as a notion in general is just that it's not fun. It's, you know, for the most part, it's not fun. For like you said, it's a series of awkward bodily, you know, mm-hmm. physiological changes. And, you know, and I think,
We'll talk about it.
Oh man, I want to talk about it right now. But anyway,
I can tell we got to wrap this Raw show up and the Bad Batch.
Yeah. So Bill, I can only guess what you would give this film on a scale of 1 to 10. So I'm really curious for this score.
Well, you might be surprised. I would give it 1.5 out of. 1.5 out of 5, and the 1.5 goes to and it would be higher. It would be higher if the story just was better. And okay. I love the movie poster. It's great because it looks like, you know, Raw is over her lips, so it looks like her lips are stitched shut, mm-hmm. so she can't eat, which I think is great. I love the acting, the music, and the directing was fantastic. The dialogue was great because there was a subtlety to it, and the cinematography was phenomenal. But it's like, don't ask me to buy into a movie that, you know, you just said, you know, buy this overhyped thing. And it's like, no, I can't. It just didn't, you know, this isn't real. So because I know it isn't real, I can't feel it. Maybe that's why the disgusting parts that had these weirdos passing out and like, oh, I feel faint. Really? How Victorian era of you. You know, it didn't work. It was like watching, to me, Hostel. It's like, this is so fake. These characters are suffering, but because it's so fake, their suffering isn't real. So I'm not feeling it. Although I can in other films, you know, it all depends on setup and it wasn't set up properly. So there.
Bill, it's a good thing we're not sitting next to each other because that Hostel comparison, I wanna smack that bald head of yours right now.
Oh, dude, I'd take a bite out of you, man.
You are way fucking off the mark, man.
You're off. You're way off.
You know what? I did not buy into the hype of this film. I bought into the world it created as I was watching it. And therefore, I give Raw a 4 out of 5 stars.
Ooh, what the, what?
I was extremely taken with this movie. And you know what? I'm looking forward to what Julia Ducournau does next because, Bill, I think it's, like you said, I think it's going to be better than Raw.
Can't get any worse.
Or to me, it's just going to get better and better. Yeah, so yeah, there we go.
Well, yeah. Have fun having sex with the Blu-ray once you buy it.
I'm so pissed off because it's like it's only on DVD. It's a Walmart exclusive and there's like no bonus features. I'm like, give me a bone here. Come on.
It'll come out. Don't attack somebody on a street and start biting them and shit.
Just going to bite the DVD. I'm so turned on by it.
Well, while you're thinking about that and wallowing, I'm going to do some scream outs, man.
Oh, I got one too then.
Okay, cool. So these are scream outs to wonderful people on Twitter. So here they are. Thomas S. Flowers, Live, Laugh, Scream, Degenerate OIF veteran and author of Planet of the Dead, which is now available at Amazon. Find out more at thomassflowers.com. Sames Carolyn, otherwise known as Carolyn Sames. She's a writer, producer of indie films, president at Universal Staffing Incorporated. She's creating a sitcom. She's a traveler, and she's rated number one on Twitter in Vegas. She supports indie film, and you should support her. D. Carner, who is he? He's the guy at Scarescapes, horror filmmaker, writer, and director. USC Film School in the 90s. That's where he was. Contributor to SCRM, otherwise known as Scream Radio. And you could follow him at scarescapes.com. Lisa Sorrentino, otherwise known as My Little Rascal 8 on Twitter. The hubby and wife team making indie films. Again, support indie film. John's Horror Corner, what's that? That's MFF Horror Corner. Horror lover, movie critic, film collector, podcaster. Check his show out, Movies, Films, and More at Blog Talk Radio. And
Bill.
It's movies. No, that's for the blog. That's for the blog. For the website, it's Movies, Films, and Flicks. Yeah, okay. Movies, Films, and Flicks. Yeah, that's what.
Well, the podcast is named Movies, Films, and Flicks,
right.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was doing. our great friends also at GTGMcast, otherwise known as Good Times, Great Movies.
Yes.
A podcast about the best and worst of 80s cinema. Doesn't it get any better than that? No. And you can follow them on iTunes. Do that. Israel_Finn. Why? Because he's that cool. Author of horror, suspense, sci-fi, and dark fantasy. Go to israelfinn.com. The great Gia Lee, otherwise known as Author Gia Lee. Author of Hurricane Hound, The Clever Cat That Could, etc. She's a vegetarian. Did she watch Raw yet?
I want to know.
Well, feed her a piece of rabbit kidney and see what happens, Johnny. What happened to Johnny? He gave the woman rabbit kidney. I told him not to. This is what happens.
But it was served with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Oh, man. Gia Lee's going to kill you. But she won't kill you if you're going to look at her books on Amazon. And you could go to, again, Gia Lee. The great Ron Shaw.
Yeah.
Otherwise known as Ron Gizmo. He has a wonderful show. The Ron Shaw Redemption Hour, one of the greatest titles of all time. He is south of north and east of west, the great city of Atlanta. And he is a writer extraordinaire, very prolific, a lot of novels. Check him out at ronshawmedia.com and also go to the great Amazon page for him as well. A Fiend on Film, we mentioned him before, the great Dave Kay. And horror, Indian foreign films, art, graphic design, architecture, photos. He's fantastic, a punk rocker of old who's just awesome as hell. The great Kent_Harper. He's an award-winning actor, writer, filmmaker. You can see his acting reel on YouTube. Check him out on IMDb. He's the man who brought you Surveillance. And yes. His website is filmstarpictures.net. He lives in the great city of Los Angeles. And he's filming right now, even as I say this. And finally, Eric Weiss. Where is he? Zombie Riot. He's the creator of ZombieRiot.com and RiotDaily.com. What does he love? He loves head cheese. Finger sandwiches, probably with real fingers in it. Elbow macaroni and brains. So I think you get everything's working there with Zombie Riot. And again, go to RiotDaily.com. Johnny, who do you have?
I just wanted to give a scream out to the good guys at Cryptic Pictures.
Yay!
I saw them tweet about Mortal Remains, and it is now out on DVD, and I just bought a copy of it. So
long overdue.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's awesome. So I suggest everybody go and check out crypticpictures.com. If you don't want to buy it, I'm sure there's other ways to check it out. It looks like there's a lot of stuff on the horizon as far as distribution.
For Mortal Remains, the movie. Yes.
So there's going to be more ways for you to see it if you don't do the physical media thing, which is perfectly fine.
Not really. But, I should do physical media. Sorry, go ahead.
No. You don't have to tell me, man. I'm all about the physical media. But seriously, it's a film we watched. We had the privilege of watching like about 4 years ago after we started doing this podcast. We watched it together and it had quite an effect on both of us. Very much unlike Raw.
We were both stunned watching it, and people could check out that show. We did a show on it, so check it out. And we also did I had the honor and pleasure of doing an interview with Mark and Christian. Please check that out as well.
Well, you know what though, that's the show that disappeared.
Yeah, but didn't we do it again?
No, we didn't do it again. We have to do it again.
Well, anyway, I'll double check. Either we did it, or we'll do it again, or Johnny's going to write a review on it. Whatever. I don't know. But something's going to happen.
I say we do all of those things, but that's just me. It's a great movie. Yeah.
I know. I know they premiered it in Pittsburgh where they're near, and I wish they had done it in, like, you know, Harrisburg too, or Philadelphia. That would have been great, man. I would have been there in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I know they sent me an invite to it, and I was like, Pittsburgh is like 3.5 hours away.
Yeah, I wouldn't have minded. It was just the timing was not good at all. So,
well, and I think I already had plans for like the next day, so I was kind
of. But hey, if you want to be part of the Bad Batch, go right ahead. But if you want to keep it raw, keep it real. So that's my final comment.
I'm going to rub myself raw after that.
Oh, okay. I'm sure you are, you sick bastard.
I'm actually going to eat some raw ramen. How does that sound?
That's hot.
Yeah, no, it's not, Bill.
Yeah, wait till it gets caught in your teeth. Like, oh, this was stupid. I think it pierced my upper palate. Way to go, Johnny.
Oh, it's like I open the ramen noodles and there's like a meatball in the middle of them, you know.
And then Johnny goes batshit crazy, taking bites out of people on the street. You freak! I'm Johnny Numb.
My take on Raw would be the exact opposite. I would be the guy letting my cats eat me if I ran out of food for them.
Oh, so, dude, your freak factor just went through the roof. Our ratings just plummeted, man.
And my Tinder profile is, yeah.
Oh, on that note, Johnny, I think it's time to say Auf Wiedersehen or whatever.
Auf Wiedersehen, until we vegetate again.
Oh, gosh. All right, bye.
See ya.